and mouseless.
A mouseless, yeah.
House Committee on Revenue for Thursday, May 4th, 2009 will come to order.
He said May 4th. It's actually...
We'll open a work session on House Bill 3405. And colleagues, we did have considerable discussion last night about that, and we're prepared to have some more, but first I'd like to hear from Christine Shin-Ryan. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're spending a lot of time here these days,
and we
appreciate it.
My business is suffering a little. Good morning, Chair Barnhart, and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me to address you today. For the record, my name is Christine Chin-Ryan, president of Synergy Consulting, Inc., an Oregon company since 1988. I'm also chair of the Governor's Small Business, former chair of the Governor's Small Business Council, the chair of the Oregon Small Business for Responsible Leadership, and chair of the Oregon Small Business Healthcare Initiative. Since my testimony is short, I would like to read it. This testimony is submitted on behalf of the Oregon Small Business for Responsible Leadership, herein referred to as OSBRL. OSBRL is a statewide, nonpartisan, all-volunteer advocacy organization committed to the creation, promotion, and preservation of small business. OSBRL would like to commend Chair Barnhart and the committee for their diligence in recognizing the importance of small businesses to the Oregon economy. This amendment attempts fairness to small businesses and equitable distribution of costs and levels of taxation in the face of economic necessity. It also speaks to small businesses as stakeholders in the Oregon economy by addressing the costs associated with the societal and state services extended to business by the state of Oregon on behalf of our fellow Oregonians. OSBRL supports the latest amendment to House Bill 3405, corporate minimum tax structure, corporate tax rates, and the corporate filing fee structure. The tier structure of the corporate minimum is very similar to the tier stock structure initially proposed by OSBRL. We believe that the latest amendment of House Bill 3405 is fairer to small businesses than the previous amendments. Since a flat fee of $300 across the board disproportionately impacts small business, we find the tier structure more reasonable and believe that larger corporations will not be unduly inconvenienced by a more reasonable distribution of the financial burden. Setting the corporate minimum for the smallest firms to $150 seems to be a very positive show of good faith by the legislature towards the largest engine of our state economy. House Bill 3405 took into account small businesses' level of contribution and not overburdening the struggling small business. OSBRL believes in shared responsibility and the vital services that Oregon needs to continue to provide in this economic climate. This is submitted on behalf of the OSBRL. Thank you, Chair Barnhart, and members of the committee for your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you very much. We really appreciate your coming all the way to Salem again this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the Dash 9 amendments.
Representative Bailey moves the Dash 9 amendments to House Bill 3405. Discussion? Is there any objection to the Dash 9s? Seeing no objection, the Dash 9s are adopted. Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's no subsequent referral on this.
This bill needs to be subsequently referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Turns out there's a substantial fiscal, isn't there? I don't remember exactly.
You have the Dash 9 fiscal.
We have the Dash 9 fiscal. And so it needs to be moved to the Ways and Means Committee.
Of course, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3405 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Actually, there isn't a prior reference, but...
With a subsequent referral, too.
With a subsequent referral, thank you. Representative Bailey moves House Bill 3405 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Discussion. Please call the roll.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Bent.
No.
Representative Berger.
No.
Representative Bruin.
No.
Representative Gelfand.
Aye.
Representative Paul.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
No.
Chair Barnhart.
Aye. The motion, having received the required majority, is adopted. The bill goes to the Ways and Means Committee. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3405 and open a work session on House Bill 2649. Okay. Chris, where are we?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the dash 4 was the latest version, and that was the version that was discussed the last time this bill was heard. And you do have all of the appropriate paperwork in your packet. You have the revenue impact statement, and you have a fiscal impact statement, which is a, well, actually, it's a minimal expenditure, so I'm not sure that we handed out the minimal statement for the dash 4, but it is a minimal fiscal.
Okay. Great. Again, because of the possibility that they may wish to add some expenditure items to this bill, it needs to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Colleagues, we've had a substantial discussion of this. Representative Bailey, do you have a motion?
Chair, I move the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2649.
Representative Bailey moves the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2649. Discussion? Is there any objection to the amendment? All right, seeing none, the amendment's adopted. Representative Bailey?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2649 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Bailey moves House Bill 2649 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Berger?
Yes, Mr. Chair, as this comment actually applies to both of the bills we've heard today, but with regard to this bill, we have discussed it, we have heard it, we've discussed it, we've heard it, we've amended it. It was a bad idea to begin with. It's still a bad idea, and I oppose it. Thank you.
Succinct. Thank you very much. Representative Bruin.
Question for staff, if I may.
Sure.
Chris, can you give us, we have had a lot of discussion on this and the other bill. One of the things I haven't heard asked or answered, though, is how this will affect the state's forecasting. Will this increase certainty or increase uncertainty, you know, from a forecasting perspective, and how will that relate to, you know, kicker questions, potential future kicker questions, if at all?
Representative Boone, the bill primarily or only affects income at the high end and adds higher marginal rates there, and that is, the higher incomes are the components of income that are more volatile, whether it's capital gains in particular is usually the big item, but it does add a degree of volatility to the system in focusing on that income, and so there is it will increase the challenges of accurately making the state economist, having him make that forecast.
Increase the challenges.
It'll increase mm-hmm. that. It makes the system a little more volatile at that top end.
Is that another way of saying, if I may, Mr. Chair?
Please.
There's more likelihood that we will get our future projections wrong and a higher likelihood that a kicker will kick, given a whole bunch of other...
We have the higher likelihood variables of whether or not there's a kicker. And I think over time, and Paul can correct me if I'm wrong, about half the time there has been a kicker. And so I don't know if it will increase the likelihood, that piece, but it could affect that piece as well. But within the 2% margin, that's a pretty narrow margin anyway. And then you have the impact on the size of potential kickers as well in terms of the volatility. So there are two components to that make the forecast a little more challenging.
Thank you.
Representative Riley.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to note
I'm sorry, did you have another one?
I did. I just want to make a comment.
Go ahead with yours, and then we'll go to Representative Riley.
I share Representative Berger's feelings on this. This will hurt Oregon jobs. This will hurt Oregon competitiveness. In a best-case scenario, this will delay our recovery, but it does make Oregon number one in something, Mr. Chair. It makes Oregon number one in personal income tax rates. So we can hang that on our shelf, if you will. So I will be voting no.
Thank you, Mr. Boone. Representative Riley.
I just wanted to note that it will make it very difficult to make it less likely that we predict the revenue. We've never got it right yet.
Oh. You can't increase on 100%. Okay, thank you. Other representative call.
Yeah, I would like to say that one of the things I think I've talked about a bit over the course of this session is balancing the interests of simplicity and fairness. And I think that this bill strikes an adequate balance there. I think that there have been policies in place for a number of years that have benefited a great number of people while others have suffered. I think that some of those people are going to be asked to pay that benefit back as a result of this bill. Not everyone who is going to see an increased tax burden falls into that category, but a significant portion might. And because of that, I think it strikes a fair balance, both in creating a simple tax structure, but that also brings greater fairness into our tax system. And because of that, I'll be an aye vote today.
Thank you, Representative Paul. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think it's important that as we consider these packages that we note that there are enormous benefits to protecting education and health care and public safety, the things that this state does. And those are benefits that accrue to all Oregonians and to small businesses. This is really the Middle Class Relief Act, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Pope.
Kelser,
thank you. I keep doing that, don't I?
You do, Mr. Chair, but that's okay.
Thank you.
I'm supporting this bill today. I recognize the discomfort that some have with it, but I think it's also important to look at it within the overall context of what we're doing in this legislative session. Like everyone else in the country, Oregon is struggling with significant reductions and a recession. The hole is too big to fill with cuts alone. We have $2 billion worth of cuts in this budget. I don't think that the people of Oregon can tolerate another $800 million in reductions in our budget. And I was reminded of this morning as I left home. My daughter walked me out to the car. And the first thing she said was, "At work today, don't vote against the panda bears." I'm not sure what that bill is. But the next thing that she said was, "And take care of our schools." And I think that this is a really important piece of taking care of our schools, taking care of health care, taking care of the most vulnerable among us. We have to be responsible, but we also have to protect the essential services that we deliver. This is what's going to help us do that, and that's why I will give it my aye vote.
Thank you. Others? I just simply want to make certain that as we talk about these issues that we cover the whole waterfront. It is true that when you raise taxes, no matter who it's on, there are some effects, but just simply because of that, in the private sector. It's also true that, especially in a situation like the one we're in today, that being able to support our budget means that we do a better job of maintaining what we can in the areas of education, healthcare, and public safety. Everyone in this room knows, but there are people perhaps on the internet who are watching us today who may not know, that well over 90% of our entire general fund budget goes to those three areas. And so when we're faced with a situation like the one we're in now, where we're going to make somewhere between $2 and $3 billion in cuts, depending partly on whether these two bills we're considering this morning actually pass the legislature, those cuts are going to come out of health care, education, and public safety, because there is nowhere else for them to come from. That's where we spend our money. And when you talk about revenue increases, our job is to make them fair. Right now, under our current system, families making $20,000 a year pay the same rate on their income as people making over $1 million a year. This bill will improve on that. We have to protect our core services. And what we're really asking is for our wealthiest citizens to step up and help to be involved in making sure that cuts don't go so deeply that our system essentially moves backwards. And I believe that Oregonians will support that. And with that, the motion is on the moving this bill to the Ways and Means Committee. Would you please call the roll?
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
No.
Representative Berger.
No.
Representative Boone.
No.
Representative Gelser.
Aye.
Representative Call.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
No.
Chair Barnhart.
Aye. The motion, having received the required majority, is passed, and the bill goes to the Ways and Means Committee. And with that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2649 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 563.
Day. And the room clears.
Do you have the list? Do you have the list of witnesses? Will somebody else will bring those? Okay. Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, this bill is about assisting county assessment function. According to the DOR, Department of Revenue, counties collect around $27-28 million in interest on delinquent property tax accounts annually. Approximately $12 million of that money goes to $12 million of that money goes to county assessment function funding assistance program and distributed back to the county government district, and the remaining $16 million is distributed back to taxing districts as unsegregated funds whose distribution is proportional to a district's share of total property tax in the county. What this bill does is directs all deposits of interest charged and collected on late payment of property taxes to the county assessment function funding assistance account. And the bill applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2009. So what this bill basically does is just dedicate all delinquent interest on property taxes to county assessment function.
All right, thank you. Let's hear from Gail Riddell, Annette Spickard, and Ralph Wyatt. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I'm accompanied by Annette Spickard, who's the Lane County Assessor and Tax Collector and current president of both of those associations, and Ralph Wyatt, who's the Lynn County Administrator and Budget Director for Lynn County. This issue is going to sound familiar to you. We came to you in March with a concept, House Bill 2071, that would have that presented the problem and would have provided at least a partial solution by raising the assessor processing fee on documents filed with county clerks. That space had been taken by the Low-Income Housing Alliance, so there was no room for more clerk fees. So we bring this concept to you after the Senate voted it out 29-0. This would, as they said, would direct all interest on delinquent property taxes to the CAFA, and that is the grant fund that is directed to the assessment and taxation fund function for counties and the state. The concept's a product of a work group in October of 07 through January of 08, organized by the Department of Revenue. And it was brought together to identify solutions to the destabilized funding of county property tax administration. It included representatives of direct recipients to the property tax collection, the School Boards Association, Confederation of School Administrators, County Colleges Association, League of Cities, Special Districts, and AOC. Among other things, the group agreed that all interest should be moved, undelinquent property taxes should be placed in the CAFA, and AOC requested this bill as a result. At that time, the immediate concern was expiration of Secure Rural Schools Act. It was reauthorized, but at a smaller and diminishing amounts over only 4 years. The funding for a full array of state and county services and county local services remains highly unstable. In fact, the projected CAFA share of the county A&T expenses, which originally were designed to cover 35% to 40% of the costs, are now down to 22%. This is important to the state because the County Property Tax Administration collects critical funds for education and local and state county shared services. In terms of the amount, in biennial terms, it's some $4 billion for education, nearly $2 million for cities, and close to $1 million for special districts in a biennium. This program originated in 1989 when the property tax system was disintegrating, caused by the recession at that time and termination of federal general revenue sharing. County governing bodies had to make across-the-board cuts. This program was arrived at through long and hard negotiations of all the stakeholders and was intended to cover 35% to 40% of A&T costs. The Department of Revenue under this program supervises assessment taxation, administration, and the CAFA. Qualifying counties, those that meet standards imposed by the Department of Revenue, can share in the grants based on the size of their DOR-approved A&T budgets. CAF is fed by three sources: the assessor processing fee I mentioned earlier, a portion of interest on delinquent property taxes, and a $5 million-plus biennial contribution from the state to partially compensate for collections for the state fund, the state school system. However, the last payment of over half a million to the CAFA was swept in the rebalance of the state 07-09 budget, and the $5.2 million, which was scheduled to go into CAFA for 9-11, was taken in the co-chair's budget. The county revenue engine is sputtering. Curry County, for example, since fiscal year 07-08, has operated under a special statutory dispensation that permits them to limp along with less than adequate standards as long as they have a plan to get back into compliance. A 2004 DOR study found that the level of funding at that time, when CAFA provided 32% of the costs, permitted most but not all of critical program requirements. The two that fell short were active appraisal and omitted property discovery. Those are the two most directly related to finding new property that should be on the tax rolls and yet is not. Since 2004, the situation has gotten worse. CAFA has not kept up with costs. Counties get statewide 19% share of the property tax, yet they are doing the best they can to stay up with the requirements and have approved budgets this fiscal year of $91.5 million, of which only $19.8 million is made up of CAFA funds. The rest are locally raised county general funds. Counties face a full array of state county shared services, and you see that ubiquitous colored chart attached. We're dealing with measures 50 and 5. We're dealing with the ramp down of federal forest payments, as I referred to earlier, and the gap between annual county revenues and expenditures continues to grow and could reach, by 2020, some $2 billion a year. When revenues fall behind needs, the local pressure will mount for those health and public safety services that potentially are matters of life and death. it's going to be difficult and unlikely that we'll see a groundswell of support for field appraisers in the assessor's office. If counties cannot meet the minimum standards, then Department of Revenue is put in an untenable position. They can withhold the grant, and that would, in effect, cause the implosion of the system. Senate Bill 563A offers an incremental but necessary investment, and we urge your passage of it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Annette, make some comments, too.
Please. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. My name is Annette Spicker, Lane County Assessor and Tax Collector, and President of the Oregon State Association of County Assessors and the Oregon County or Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors. Thank you for allowing me to spend a few minutes with you this morning. As Mr. Riddell mentioned, in March, we presented some information to you about how the CAFA fund works, and I had a little PowerPoint for you, which, again, I just remind you that we have a very important partnership with the state and with the local taxing districts to help support a healthy property tax system, and that mechanism is the CAFA fund. And as Mr. Riddell has already mentioned to you, the fund itself, before any of the changes from the Ways and Means budget, was falling behind in keeping up with its goals of offsetting up to 30% of the county's cost to provide the A&T service for all taxing districts. Currently, we're at about 20% offset, and that's going to drop now that the $5 million state contribution's been eliminated. For Lane County specifically, our reduction under that co-chair's budget is about $188,000. And the way the CAFA works with the state statutes is that the county commissioners are required to adequately fund the A&T function and provide this mandated service for all of the taxing districts, regardless of those fluctuations of the incoming revenue from the CAFA fund. And so we did budget for a lower amount of CAFA offset for Lane County, but our commissioners are pressured to find that money elsewhere in order to keep us in compliance with the state. I wanted to also just make a few comments to you about the cumulative effect of some of the decisions that are coming out of the legislature this session for us, not just the funding piece, but that there are numerous bills this session. I think we're down to about 65 active bills that affect the property tax system in some way. And some examples of things that will bring us new workload without any associated funding to help do that work are, for example, House Bill 2181, if that passes, would allow the Department of Energy and local cities to ask us to collect loan payments for them if they loan out funds for renewable energy or alternative energy products. And so expanding our role to be more of a collection agency than just focused on property tax. We have a bill, House Bill 2339, that looks like it'll go through. That's a confidentiality requirement under the public records law that will require us to go back and manually redact all of our old records regarding certain individuals that qualify for confidentiality. But again, an additional cost to us and workload to go back and do all these little things with no corresponding funding to pay for it. Another one is House Bill 3056, which looks likely to pass. That's a new version of urban renewal, and that will be significant for us in terms of reprogramming software and setting up our systems to handle a new version of urban renewal. House Bill 2436, which is the new low-income housing recording fee, did not exempt tax collectors from the fee. Therefore, we're required to front that $15 fee every time we record a warrant to attempt to collect past-due taxes on behalf of all of the districts. So that did not come with any funding to help counties pay for that. We're going to have to absorb that. We have a potential new program for historic property special assessment that will change the way that we have to handle those accounts. So I could go on and on, but we have a lot of things that come to us every session that adds additional work or forces us to change our work, and normally it does not come with any kind of funding assistance. We rely on the CAFA fund to help us get all of this work done. As far as I know, we don't have any responsibilities being taken away from us this session, so we're all very concerned about how we're going to absorb new work, serve the districts well, collect all of the taxes that they are legally entitled to, and to make sure that we can do everything we can to fulfill our legal obligations for everyone. One other item I'd like to point out is the importance of our appraisals, not just in adding new property to the tax rolls. A lot of people focus on new construction, which is important, but things have changed a little bit with the creation of local option levies, which the legislature allowed in 2001, and local option levies are an additional tax that they're allowed to collect if passed by the voters on a short-term basis beyond their permanent tax rate, and many school districts, fire districts, cities have taken advantage of this. Their citizens support their service, vote for them, put them in place. But what I would like to remind you of is those are very dependent on the accuracy of our real market value, because they are the very first thing that zeroed out if there's compression on an account. And compression is the Measure 5 limit based on real market value. You can't pay more than $5 per thousand of your real market value for education, or $10 per thousand of real market value for general government. So if that real market value number is not correct, we end up having problems with the schools and the cities and the fire districts receiving the correct amount of local option revenue that they're allowed to receive. So, and local options are outside the state school fund formula. That's additional money the school districts receive without an impact from the state. And, for example, in Eugene, the Eugene School District receives about $14 million a year from their local option, and it's really been a lifesaver for them in maintaining programs. So I would just close with saying that we appreciate your consideration of any assistance that you can provide to us to make sure that we are stable and able to serve all of the districts that we work with locally. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please.
Yes. Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, as mentioned, I'm Ralph Wyatt. I'm the Linn County Administrative Officer, and among other things that I get to do, I'm the Budget Director for the county. So my remarks are really going to be directed specifically at what's happening to Linn County as an organization. We do have an approved budget for next fiscal year, even though we don't know what the state is going to do at this point in time. But just to put some context on it, essentially from this current year to next fiscal year, our total budget's down $8.5 million. Our general fund, which is really the subject of concern here, is down $2.3 million. We are a county that gets ONC funding. This year, compared to 06, we were down $260,000 in our general fund. Going into next year, we're down $235 million. 10-11, we're down about $210. And the last, as Miguel mentioned, the fourth year, we could be down about $780,000. Those are general fund dollars specifically. The assessor's office is funded by state CAFA money and the county general fund money. Really, counties have very few options as far as raising revenue. Local option levy was mentioned. Linn County has had a local option levy in one form or another for over 25 years, funding law enforcement. Goes to the sheriff's office, district attorney's office, and the juvenile department. That amount of money is about double our permanent rate revenue. Compression was mentioned. We're losing over $1 million in the law enforcement levy currently, and as assessed value and real market value get closer and closer together, as was mentioned, the compression amount goes up. What I'm trying to do is paint a picture that says our general fund revenues, the outlook for our general fund revenues, is not really rosy. And there's very little money to move around internally as far as general funds is concerned. In our approved budget going forward for next year, we've already cut two assessor positions, and that doesn't consider the $90,000 that we get out of the $5 million that the co-chair's budget has zeroed out. That's two positions out of a total of 27 that the county's cutting for next year, and truthfully, based on state revenues, we will probably cut some more. Just when we know what the revenues really are. We have, over the years, supported the assessor's office because it is critical. It's a revenue engine. And if you start compressing, literally, the source of revenue, and the county gets money from property taxes, as mentioned, you start hurting yourself. So we haven't done that. We do, in fact, appreciate the function. We're spending almost $500,000 to replace the software that the assessor uses, the appraisers use, so that we can go forward and continue to produce that revenue for everybody. I don't know what else I could say to urge you to approve 563, because it will, if you would, provide some revenue to continue an operation that produces money for lots and lots of functions. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Berger.
If you indulge me, I have a number.
Please.
For the Lincoln County Administrator,
mm-hmm.
How? Give me a scale, if you've got it off the top of your head, how much is in your next, is it biennial budget? Or
no, it's
annual budget. How annual. Much is in your annual budget for taxation and assessment, and how much are you budgeting for CAFA funds?
We were budgeting about $750,000 for CAFA money. I can subtract 90 from that right now. The total budget for the assessor's office, and this, I hope I'm within 20% because I don't carry it around.
I know this is a tough
right.
question.
Is probably.
I'm looking for scale.
$1.5 million.
Okay.
Somewhere in there.
So $750,000.
Yeah, I mean it's. I'm probably low.
Of 1.5.
Closer to $2 million in total. 2.1.
Okay, and that's county funds.
That's total for the assessor's office, including. See, we've.
That what I'm looking CAFA. For, how much is CAFA and how much is county funds? That's on a percentage.
I think probably two-thirds, one-third for us.
Okay. And is that, so that's the next
one. I don't
know. Is that typical, Gil, of counties? Is that how dependent
yeah,
on CAFA
think,
they are?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Representative Berger, no, it is not. Statewide, yeah. it's 22%.
Yeah.
So 22%.
Statewide, yes.
Yeah.
Is CAFA. Now,
yes.
My next question, if you'll, is how are they distributed? It's a grant thing. You have to apply for it every year?
Chair, Representative Berger, the counties must turn in their budgets for assessment of taxation by May to the Department of Revenue. Department of Revenue then.
Oh, wow.
Department of Revenue then determines if it is sufficient to meet standards. The assessment and taxation
right.
standards at the county level. If it is, then all the counties that meet those standards get to share in proportion to the amount of their DOR approved budgets.
Are there, yeah.
Actually, there's a table right here that I thought I was off. I'm right, way off. Total certified expenditures for Lynn County in this fiscal year is 3.3. We got 670 from CAFA.
Is there a table for all counties that's right. available that you could pass out to us at some
Chair
point or get
Department
send to
Revenue.
My office?
Yes.
I would appreciate having that information. There are counties that don't get CAFA funds?
Madam Chair, President Berger, not at this point.
Okay.
There is a kind of a safety valve process that if a county can show that it temporarily will fall out of compliance but has a plan to get back into compliance, then the Department of Revenue may approve that on a temporary basis, watch them closely, and make sure they get back into compliance and continue the grants.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Another question. The county administrator mentioned they're in compression and don't have any, you know, room under the... Are all the counties in that situation, or others would have capacity for taxation?
Chair, Representative Berger, the assessed, the maximum assessed value and the real market value is coming closer together. We had a gap of maybe as much as 30% in some counties. Some counties you don't have a gap, but that quite that large. But it's with the fall of the real market value and the inching up of the maximum assessed value, they're coming together. And once they do, the lower of the two is the maximum assessed value.
Yeah. How many counties are currently have capacity? Do you know off the top of your head? You could provide this information.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I think all still do, but the buzz that I'm hearing from assessors is that particularly in counties like Crook and Jefferson and Deschutes and some of the others, they may in fact flip at some point. I mean, it's coming down quite quickly.
Okay, Mr. Chair, if I could just make a comment, this seems like a no-brainer until you read what I'm reading, which is the revenue impact statement on this. The money is currently going to community colleges and schools who have similar issues. And I'm not unsympathetic to the counties and your budget problems, but I'm also not unsympathetic to the budget problems of the schools who essentially, we're not creating new money here. Mm-hmm. We're reallocating money. And so that's why I'm asking pointed questions here. It isn't that I'm not, that I don't realize you are the engine that drives the property tax system, and I'm aware of the CAFA. So don't take me to be totally unsympathetic here in these questions. It's just that these are, you were splitting the baby here, okay? This is not a fun job.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, may I
please comment?
Yes. Simply to say that our hope is that with a full staff, we will be able to find properties, and this is something we can't guarantee, of course, in every county, but we have a sense that in some counties they are behind enough that with a full complement of staff they'll be able to find some properties and net out some of that cost that you're concerned about.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Call and then Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to dig down a little bit deeper on Representative Berger's last comment, because these numbers are pretty startling. You know, for the 09-11 biennium, we're talking about almost $17 million of revenue that the school districts and community colleges are going to forego. I understand that things happen before. This bill was, the process that led to this bill was started before session, but right now we're in pretty dire circumstances as a state. And I guess what I'm asking is right now the appropriate time to do this? I can tell you with a certainty that school districts and community colleges are going to forego programs and services as a result of a $16 million or close to $17 million reduction. Is the same thing going to happen to the assessors and the county's ability to do assessments? I'm not talking about going forward and finding properties, which would be great. I'm just saying, do you need this money to do your job as you're currently doing it? Because I think the school districts are in a situation where they actually need this money to continue on providing the service they're currently providing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Call, I would say that the system is under great stress, and we have one situation reported from Lincoln County where their budget is requiring them at this point, particularly with the taking of the $5 million this biennium, to reduce a couple of appraiser positions. And Department of Revenue, I understand, has said, no, you shall not. And they're waiting to see about the determination of this bill. If this bill doesn't go forward, then we will have an issue there. And I expect that would spread to other counties. I would rather not say that, but that seems to be the fact at this point.
Yes. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And if I might follow on Representative Berger's Solomonic wisdom about splitting the baby, I think that I would be more comfortable if we were able to somehow hold the school districts harmless in this process. There's money. There's almost $13 million here from other taxing jurisdictions, and I would feel more comfortable about this bill if these funds are needed by the counties. If we were able to sweep out the funds that would go to school districts or community colleges otherwise, I think that if we're talking about splitting the baby, that is an equitable compromise I could live with.
Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair. So the premise here, if I'm understanding correctly, is that by reallocating the funds from the delinquent property taxes entirely to the CAFA account, that the counties will have sufficient resources to be able to collect on delinquent property taxes and additional properties such that the overall size of the property tax pie that's being divided is larger. Is that premise correct?
Chair, Representative Bailey, that's a correct premise.
And we're talking about the interest.
The interest. Thank you for that clarification.
It's not the delinquent taxes, but the interest.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Chair. May I ask a follow-up?
Please, go ahead.
What is the timeline in which that cycle happens? If we were to pass this bill this session, in what biennium would we, if the premise is correct that the overall revenues back in the property tax system will increase to offset the loss, what is the timeline for that increase to happen?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey, the new property that's found, you're talking about field work. I would hope that that could continue and start in those counties that are less able to do that straight away. I would ask you to put that question to Department of Revenue in terms of the exact timing of once this bill passed, when the new money would come into CAFA. I would ask that because I don't want to guess about the exact timing of the money, but as soon as we did get that new money, it would buttress the ante operations at the county level. It would permit more of that field work.
Please.
If you had to ballpark it, would you say in this biennium, in next biennium, when could we start seeing a ramping up of collections such that overall size of the pie increases?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey, certainly in 2009-11 is what we're looking at for, and certainly fiscal year 9-10, we would hope we'd start growing that property tax pie.
Yeah, well, I think there's one of the assessors can give us a better answer.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bailey, the property tax system works on an annual cycle. So, for example, all of the work that we are doing right now on things that have happened since January 1 of 2009 will be on the roll for the January 10 assessment date and then billed and collected in the October-November 2010 time period, if that helps you think about how the delay. So we're on an annual cycle. Everything that happens within a calendar year is assessable on the following January 1, but the tax bill doesn't go out till October of that year. So there is going to be a lag time between placing new value on the roll, updating all of the changes, whatever new work the assessor's offices will be doing before those specific tax statements go in the mail.
Mr. I guess part of it also is, in addition to the actual cyclical lags, that there are probably, I would guess, functions that you are not performing now that you could perform with additional dollars, hence the reason for this bill, and that there might be a lag in hiring, training, updating computer systems, things like that, finding those properties, making sure that those properties are coming in the door, that there are probably functional lags as well that don't necessarily follow the timeline. So that's part of the sense that I'm trying to get. But I guess part of the other question is, with these additional dollars, would you expect the duration of delinquencies to be shorter?
Mm. Chair Barnhart, Representative Bailey, that's a difficult question to answer because a lot of that is dependent on the taxpayer's ability to pay. And so we have, under the statute, specific notification requirements and collection procedures and ways that we go about contacting the taxpayer, and we do that now. But whether... I think that would be dependent more on things going on with the economy, some things that are sort of outside of our control. Are we fulfilling our obligation for all of the notice requirements and doing the warrants and things like that? Yes. But does that, by us doing more of that, would that increase collections specifically on delinquent accounts? I don't know, because a lot of that has to do with the person's ability to pay. Eventually, you know, it does go into a foreclosure process and becomes property of the county to dispose of, but we haven't quite seen a jump in that activity yet.
Final follow-up, Mr. Chair, thanks. I guess my question is trying to get at, will we see a feedback effect in that as the counties have more resources to collect delinquent taxation, will the duration of that delinquency decrease to the extent that the interest earned off of those delinquencies reduces the number of dollars that are available in the CAF account for that collection?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bailey, I believe if we look back in time at the CAFA account, because the delinquent interest has been a component of that account for quite some time now, I think we would see that it's been relatively stable over time, maybe some blips here and there, but we could certainly look back and see if there's been fluctuations in delinquent interest collected as a result of any spikes in collection activity that's cleaning out those delinquent accounts. I think I understand what you're asking now. So if you would like, I would be happy to provide you, along with Representative Berger's request of the current CAFA allocation, something that shows the trend of the delinquent interest activity. That is available. We can get that for you.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, all three of you, for your testimony. And in particular, I guess I'm going to use this opportunity, excuse me, to give a shameless plug for Ralph Wyatt, the administrator in Linn County. I've worked with Ralph on the Linn County Compensation Board. I think it's, well, it's 13 years. I was very pregnant the first time I served on that board. And Ralph's just tops in his field. Absolutely. I've got a lot of respect for you. So thank you for being here. I guess I've got maybe a couple, three questions, Mr. Chair, if you would indulge
please,
me, please.
Go ahead.
I'm just now trying to, in the last couple months, wrap my arms around the CAFA process. And so as I look at this, and I'm reading what I believe to be existing ORS here, already, and correct me if any of you, if somewhere along the way here I say something that's incorrect, currently 25% of the interest collected under ORS 311-505 is going to CAFA. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Springer, it's a little more than that. The original program raised the delinquent percentage from 12% to 16%, took that quarter, the new quarter, and put the delinquent interest amount into CAFA. Since that time, I believe it was 1999, the program was amended and provides that the next quartile with respect to non-education delinquent interest and non-county delinquent interest goes into the CAFA as well.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, please.
Yes.
That's exactly where I was going, and the next portion talks about that additional 25%. So already we have a significant amount, certainly not the entire 50% coming from schools, but we already have a significant amount going into CAFA.
Mr. Chair, Representative Springer, from the non-school jurisdictions. Yes.
Okay. So then I guess I'll cut to the chase here. My concern has been, I see the validity in the concept here, and I like the concept. It makes a lot of sense that if we staff more appropriately taxing well, the tax collection office, that we will have greater dividends from that. That makes sense. So, and I'm really pointing this question to you, Ralph. My concern is additional funds will come in, and we sit around the table in Linn County and our other 35 counties, and we're looking at the budget, and we're saying we have X amount of dollars for A&T, and now we're going to have these additional funds. So we're going to supplant some money and move it from here back over here. So we're redirecting money in there, but everything that's redirected in there goes out the other side into other services. And I know that looking at the county budget, it's hard to justify and it's hard to get people excited about funding the tax collector, who's going to come and get more money from you, when you can go with the more sexy departments like the Sheriff's Department and some of those others. So talk to me about that. My concern is we're going to put it in on the front end, it's going to go out the back end.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Springer, first of all, I have to say thank you for your comments. I don't know how much they're deserved, but thank you. Since it's on the record, I mean. As I mentioned in our approved budget for next fiscal year, we've already cut two positions. The counties, that's two out of 27 that we've cut from the county. We will cut more when we find out what the state's doing. We are pretty sure that 90,000 is gone out of the 5 million from the general fund that went into the CAFA. We have a fairly significant tradition of following the money. If the money goes away for a function, whoever is doing the job for that function goes away too, or at least a portion of it. So at this point in time, $90,000 more would come from the assessor's office, and there's only, I mean, it's people. That's where the money goes. So I would say that's another position or two. My urging you to do to support 563 is to maintain. First of all, I have to back up. I think Linn County traditionally has supported and operates a very good assessment and taxation operation. I think we do that. We put the money there because the governing body and the budget committee understand the function. As I mentioned, we're investing $500,000 in the software system. The bottom line is what I want to do is maintain a good operation. I don't want to see it degrade. 563 is going to allow Linn County to maintain a good operation. I think since we have a good operation, and we've talked about added property values and that sort of thing, I don't think there's a lot of property values in Linn County that we haven't captured. I think we do a good job on that. So there's not going to be a huge dividend in addition to what we're already doing. But without money, it will degrade, and we will fall behind. And that's, truthfully, that's my concern. I want to keep a good operation going. I don't want to see it, you know, pieces start to fall off. So,
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, please.
Representative Springer.
And I want to note that this is an excellent, there are edges around this question that are very important in terms of the fiscal issues, and when we hear later from the department, we'll ask them specifically to weigh in on that part of the question.
Yes,
you go ahead.
I just wanted to fill out the picture. There are two clubs that hang over the head of counties, and that's the system was set up so that the funds coming into counties from CAFA are general funds to counties, but counties are expected to comply with requirements imposed upon them by Department of Revenue and are expected to have budgets that do that. If they do not, they do not share in the grant. If, in addition to that, they decide that, well, this is just too much, we're not going to handle this, the state can seize all non-dedicated state-shared revenues from the county to perform the function, move in, perform the function, then bill the county for the balance. There is not an opt-out.
This has a very dramatic club hanging over counties' heads. So the issue of supplanting, the issue of dedication is really, I would argue, doesn't fit the concept that you're discussing here with the CAFA.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Thank you, both of you, for that. And yes, and you just kind of went there for me a little bit, Gil, but I'm going to direct this to Ralph again. And I do believe, based on what I've seen in Linn County and past behavior, I do take you at your word and believe it when you say you keep those funds, whether they're dedicated funds or not, you see them as dedicated in particular areas, and I've seen that to be true. That said, we're talking about one county here, and we're setting policy for 36. So is there a chance, and I know Gil just started going there a little bit, is there a chance, Ralph, that this money's going to go out the back door as it comes in the front door? And does the possibility exist? I know you hate that question. I apologize.
Possibilities always exist. Chair Barnhart, Representative Springer. I think in my experience, and obviously I'm not the assessor, but in my experience, assessors are very sensitive to that, and it's a major issue. I would suggest that maybe you want to speak to that, but I think that this whole area is sensitive because you have, in Linn County, we've got 64, 65 tax districts. Believe me, they watch this whole thing like a hawk. And you talk about schools. I'm in community colleges. Everybody is very interested, and in the early part of every year, the phone rings, and the assessor is asked, what do the property tax revenues look like? What should I budget? I mean, so it's a high visibility area, and I think if we started having, aside from DOR, I think if we had started having money go out the back end, I think I would get to read about it in the newspaper very quickly.
Mr. Chair, may I just comment? There's tension built into the system. It really is, in my opinion, elegant, because I have to hear from commissioners from time to time who say, DOR, yada, yada, yada. And I hear from DOR I hear from assessors, well, we had to go to DOR because the commissioner, we couldn't talk to the commissioners. Well, part of that was the problem with the assessor not being able to talk to the commissioners. Relational. There's that tension. There's the tension of the taxing districts, because they do watch this, and they are interested in this, and hence our the work group discussion. So it's a tense system built in. Provides lots of support or foundation and walls around it to keep it functioning well. My only comment.
I was wondering, were you wanting to weigh in on that?
Sure. Chair Barnhart and Representative Springer, I can't really speak to the budget committee aspect of whether county commissioners and their appointed budget committee members make their choices to fund the different services, but I can give you a little bit of perspective, being in a county where the assessor function was underfunded for many years, and we were behind, about 3 years behind chronically, in getting an accurate tax roll out the door. And the ripple effect of that was not only to the districts in that we were not collecting revenue timely for them, but there was a ripple effect to the real estate industry. And they rely heavily on our records in doing their business and closing deals for people and pulling our records for title reports and things like that. And so I think, in addition to what Mr. Wyatt has shared with you, I believe there's also the addition of the private sector paying very close attention, at least in our county, as to how we're doing with the A&T function and ensuring that it's adequately taken care of, because we have a bigger ripple effect out into that industry as well. I would guess that most counties fund their assessor's office to the minimum and that if there's additional funds, we all have our wish lists of additional projects that we want to be able to do that will have a benefit to all of the districts and to the individual property owners. So, but how the commissioners would allocate or do something different, I can't answer that part.
Right. Mr. Yeah. Chair, thank you for indulging my multiple questions.
You're very welcome, and we will ask the department later to deal with that question and how they handle their enforcement responsibilities so that we get a more rounded picture on that. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, is there a chart or a graph that shows us the impact this has specifically on each of the local government schools, ESDs, and community colleges? In other words, calls out each city and what amount they would not receive, each community college, what amount they would not receive.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, I'd expect if anybody had that, it'd be Department of Revenue, but we don't.
And you can see him grinning back there.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, I think we have those numbers in cumulative categories by K-12. Cities, special districts, for example, because we do have to report once a year a tax collector report to the Department of Revenue, but there are a lot of tax districts in the entire state. For example, there's 82 in Lane County alone, so if you wanted it by each individual, I think that would take some work at the county level to put that together, but I believe in aggregate that's already reported to the department.
Yep, thanks. Thank you. I just want to have a understanding of the relative pain versus the relative good, because easy, the pain's apparently not called out, at least for the specific entities involved, so it's difficult to make a decision without knowing.
Okay.
Thank you. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would build on both of those. I, too, would like to see the list of the impact on each specific district, and I think I'm going to be a little bit more direct in my question, building on what Representative Springer was talking about. I see the value, and philosophically it makes sense that if we're appropriately funding and staffing up our assessor's departments that we would have greater returns on taxes owed. But looking at a potential reduction of nearly $17 million for schools and community colleges across the state, what confidence should we have that in taking that loss we're really going to get that impact when we currently have, you know, clearly a very high-profile case in Lane County where our federal delegation went up the hill to get federal timber payments for something very sexy, which is public safety, and then chose, after all of that, not to spend the money on what they claimed was an absolute dire necessity. If that can happen in something that big and that obvious, what would make us think that in this case we will get that gain in return for the schools who are losing this money for something much less sexy than public safety?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gelser, county statewide, 46% of the money they collect is for schools. So they're doing their job. They are working for the school systems.
May I follow up, Mr.
Yes,
Chair?
Yes, please. Yeah.
That doesn't really answer my question. It's not about what's collected. It's what you're saying here is take money away from schools to send to us so that we can better fund our assessment systems so we can gain more money. Yet we have a current example where you said to the federal delegation, bring us more money because we need to pay for public safety. And then Lane County very overtly said, well, never mind, we didn't really mean that. We're not going to spend that money. It really undermines the confidence. Why should we take the risk of taking this money out of public schools? How can you demonstrate that we can have faith that if we send you the money, you're going to do what you're saying?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Gelser, I represent 36 independent sovereign governing bodies, and they have to answer to their own constituents, and they will. There is recall and so on at the local level. I don't want to put him on the spot, but there's a representative from Lane County, I believe, in the room. I saw him earlier. He may be able to respond to that, but I don't believe their budget is final. I think they're still undergoing discussions about that. It's a very difficult decision at the county level when you're spending down your reserves and you get money and you think the money's going to be gone in 4 years and it's diminishing over 4 years. How do you deal with it in the present day? That's the kind of issue that the governing bodies are dealing with. And again, they will have to answer to their local constituencies. So.
Yes, please.
Yes, Chair Barnhart, representing Elser. Linn County, and I would just offer that as a different example, we are spending the federal forest dollars. We do know it's going down. We're trying to keep the operation whole. My thrust is trying to keep the property tax system, and again, I have a much narrower focus, but I'm trying to keep the property tax system in Linn County at the same level that it currently is. And we're losing revenues. We're cutting. And I don't want the amount of money. I don't want to fall behind. I don't want the amount of money that goes to all the taxing districts, including Linn County, to go down because we're falling behind. So I'm saying, as Gil said, there's a governing body. There's 36 governing bodies. And how they deal with this is going to be, to a degree, different across those 36 counties. But I would suggest that from a state point of view, if you can make sure, to the best of your ability, that the revenues to run the state's property tax system is adequate, that's the greatest gain over the long term. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Riley, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very difficult. I notice it passed handily in the Senate, but it's not that easy for me. This is a very difficult bill. I understand that we can't run without the property taxes being collected, but we just had a situation in this committee where we're trying to save four high schools from closing, and I'm not sure, what this does to that, to what we just did. There's some very subtle issues here and some not so subtle issues, and it concerns me greatly. So I'm not prepared at this point to even know where I am on this bill.
Representative Riley, given the hour and the questions we've had, I don't expect to work the bill today. I'm hoping that we'll be able to answer questions and work the bill tomorrow. But we do have another panel to hear from, and if that's if we're ready, let's go ahead with that other panel. Thank you very much for your testimony. Tricia Smith, David Williams, Chuck Bennett. Yes, please. And we very much appreciate that you have a substantial information to add. To the extent that that can be done expeditiously, we'd appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We will be expeditious. Thank you, committee. My name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Mr. Chairman, I wanted to call your attention. I hope in your packets you have Amendments -3, which we hope answers some of the questions that have been posed by you to the counties. Mr. Chairman, let me kind of just set the stage just slightly, because I think there's been reference to an agreement. Mr. Chairman, certainly during the interim, many, many months ago, and billions of dollars away, we talked about this issue. And unfortunately, times have changed. Funding has changed. The bills have changed. The issues have changed. And frankly, we're here to talk about this bill, I think, under circumstances that make the issue fresh and worth talking about in its entirety. And we appreciate the level of questioning you've posed to the counties regarding various aspects of this. Central, Mr. Chairman, committee to the discussion for us is $17 million being removed from the education enterprise. Mr. Chairman, we did some quick calculations working with the limited information made available to us. We've determined that this represents $20 per student in Oregon, approximately. In Eugene, that's $400,000. For Central School District, that's $75,000. We can run through all the districts at some point if you'd like to have a look. Or
Mr. Bennett, excuse me just a moment. When you say $17 million, what period of time are you referring to?
I'm looking at the first
09-11. It's the biennial period.
I'm sorry. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you. Now I understand the magnitude of the number. Please go ahead.
You bet. Thank you, sir. Ms. Chairman, this represents, if we were to come before you with a bill, it would be to change the road funding formula between schools and counties from 75-25 to 50-50. That would be the level of raid that's being made on school funds, just to give you kind of the feel for what this looks like. What we have been primarily concerned about, I think, are the kinds of issues that have been discussed by the committee, and that is, number one, this is a core function of counties. This is similar to us in education going to the counties and asking them to pay us directly out of their operating funds for the education of children. Collecting taxes, assessment, jails, the list goes on, are their job. That's what they do. We educate children. That's what we do. And certainly we do have a relationship with them. And with that in mind, we are very interested. And I think the folks from the counties give a very good case for the importance that assessment and taxation has on those collections. And the amendments in the Dash 3 sort of take this issue on with the assumption that you wouldn't carve K-12 out of this, which, you know, when you look at preferred alternatives, we'd just soon not be part of the whole discussion here and lose the funds for the kids in the classroom. But if we are going to, we have amendments that we believe look at the question of supplanting, whether or not counties, and I think our friends from the counties were very honest in saying it's 36 sovereign entities that can make their own decisions, that the money not go for some other purpose than assessment, that it not be used to offset current level of funding that's going on, that we have then a reporting process, which is something, and if this sounds kind of like how it goes for those of you that serve on education committees, reporting requirements where you tell what you've done with the money, you set benchmarks, you measure it, and you determine whether or not it's successful. That's the model we used in looking at how we thought the reporting should go. Certainly any other kind of reporting system's fine. But if the agreement is we're paying more money to assessment and taxation in order to receive more local revenue, we'd like to have it shown to us what that looks like, because when you look at the revenue report, it's just a negative. There are no positives on this revenue report. For the first biennium, minus 17. For the second biennium, minus 18 million. For the third biennium, we're out to 015. We're losing 15 million. At some point, it would be good to know that trend reverses and we actually begin to see additional collections. Because if this is a bottomless pit, then we need to discuss it in the terms of that, not in terms of how do we deal with this on a kind of limited discussion. There is something seriously wrong if this doesn't help reverse the trend. And part of it, I've got to assume, is an assumption that we're not going to see beefed up, more aggressive assessment and tax collections. Because if that isn't happening, we're not interested in this program. This doesn't help us. This doesn't help any of the taxing districts. So thank you. And I have my colleagues with me.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association. I think Mr. Bennett did an admirable job of laying out most of our concerns here. Some points to add to this, much as was expressed by Representative Berger, you know, we are, I think, as you would all be aware, we are very sympathetic to the problems of providing mandated public services in an environment of fluctuating revenue. That's the environment we operate in, the same as the counties. Our revenue streams are slightly different than theirs, but no less fluctuating given the parameters of the income tax. Some might argue that ours are subject to greater fluctuation, but you know that's a discussion for another day. We're sympathetic to that, and to that end, last summer we participated in the work group to help try to find a way to provide more stable revenue for county assessment and taxation. As Mr. Bennett said, this individual piece was part of a greater package that we all worked to try to put together. There was a different economic climate. But it's unfortunate that this appears to be the only piece of that package that is moving forward. The other pieces were things like general fund allocations to CAFA, the document recording fee, other things that that the counties laid out earlier. It appears that the only piece moving forward is a piece that merely moves, as some of my colleagues are want to say sometimes, merely moves deck chairs around, and that is what we are doing here. We don't need to retell the economic climate we're in, but schools are at a crisis point. If only we could receive adequate funding for educating kids in the state, a la adequate funding for assessing and collecting taxation. We're multiple billions of dollars below that adequate level and are stressed beyond repair in the education system, and this just continues to add to that. However, to that end, we are acutely aware that assessment and taxation pays for a substantial portion of our services and want to find solutions to help fund that. And given that, yes, there are 36 sovereign counties, the money we are talking about here is not sovereign county money. This is money that comes from other jurisdictions, and we would need some assurance, not just a hope, not just a maybe. We need assurances that these dollars will not merely maintain current A&T program, but will enhance that program. I think Representative Gelser laid out a fine example of why we are nervous. You know, we represent sovereign entities of government as well, but I think we probably more than anybody fill out reports and are accountable for every dollar that we spend on the public education side. And if we are contributing dollars to this type of system, we would need some accountability and assurance that these dollars are spent as they are being expressed to be spent. And hence the dash three. If there are issues, I know the Department of Revenue has expressed some concern with the mechanics in the dash threes. We are happy to work with parties to try to make those amendments work more effectively, but we do need those assurances. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, and I will be very brief. My colleagues have offered you many, many reasons why we are very concerned with this bill. We would ask you not to move it forward. We have provided to you an amendment, if you're intent on moving it forward, that we believe would improve it. But we think this is not the time to move forward with this kind of solution. We are at the point in this legislative session where, because we have a tax system that does not provide for the core services of the government, whether it is the state government or the county government or school districts or cities, does not provide what is needed there. So there is a great effort by many very well-meaning people to take from one to give to the other. And I would ask you, please, to resist that temptation. It doesn't make it better for anyone to do that. And today's win is tomorrow's loss when that's the game being played here. We would not sit in front of you and suggest that you take money from other programs to give to ours, because we all are suffering. We are very sympathetic to the counties. We're very sympathetic to the cities. But we're also very sympathetic to the fifth graders that are depending upon us for their education. So we ask you not to move this bill forward, and thank you very much for hearing me.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of your committee, for the record, Lori Wimmer, representing the Oregon Education Association, 48,000 members. To back clean up here, we were not invited to the table to be a part of any agreement in last summer. However, last January, the governor's office did speak with us about whether or not we would be able to support some plan like this, particularly with a general fund hold harmless provision of $15 million at least to backfill the difference. With caveats, we sent a letter back to the governor's office as a coalition saying that we could agree to those terms as long as the caveats were honored, and we got a green light on that. That was during the time when it looked like the federal forest fees money was gone permanently. What happened in November was that there was a four-year extension. So that changed the playing field for us. And then, of course, what happened with the economy meant that there could be no $15 million general fund backfill. So that changed the playing field again. So the Oregon Education Association has never been interested in this fund shift from public education to the counties for this purpose because we weren't party to any agreement to do so under the current set of circumstances. When we did speak with the counties in this session, we were told that they would be willing to do this and phase it in so that it would begin having revenue impact in the out years, not July 1st, 2009, as this current bill before you does. So, again, not the circumstances to which we had any friendly tone. So, you know, two sessions ago, there was a Texas law firm that had a bill to go after this same funding. Last session, there was another private company that was had its eyes on the same money and had a bill to do the same, and now the counties are coming forward. The amendments before you do go to the July 1st, 2013 start date as a compromise. My preference would be, however, the compromise just proposed by Representative Call. Thank you for that. We think that $17 million is, by the way, my quick back of the napkin math, about 377 beginning teaching jobs, just to give you an idea of the magnitude of what it is you're discussing for public education. We too would point out that if this is supposed to be an investment that earns us more revenues in the out year, why then does the revenue impact statement suggest otherwise? Because the out years show continued losses for us. We would respectfully ask you to slow down and reconsider this, and if there is some movement of this bill, that it involve us as partners. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Springer.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all four of you for your testimony and a balanced approach. Laura, you mentioned 377. Is that correct? Teaching jobs. That's over a biennium. So annually it'd be half of that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Springer, I was just pointing out what the value of $17 million buys.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I would note, we've heard it twice from two of you about the dollars that are reflected in the revenue impact statement. But I think the important thing to note, as staff is just pointing out to me, that this is a static impact statement. It does not assume that there is any change in tax receipts. And so this would be assuming that there was no improvement in tax receipts as a result of the change in allocation. And I think that we've heard testimony that in some counties there would be a reduction in degradation of tax receipts, and in other counties there might be an improvement. I do recall that when we heard the other bill, the so-called Jackson County bill, the number of which I do not recall, there were at least two assessors who testified that they had not done field visits for a number of years, and they expected that if they did so, they would find properties that could be assessed, and that would increase property tax assessments. So it's a mixed bag. Do you want to respond to that,
Mr. Chairman? Yeah. I would. We do understand we're looking at a static issue, but Mr. Chairman, I just want to remind you of testimony from the counties. There's maybe hope, could be kind of response, and
right.
We're used to the idea. We're always asked, how are you going to measure it, and what will the measurement look like? And so we would kind of expect...
Well, being teachers, we expect that.
That's correct. And, Ms. Chairman, I know you know this, but it would really help us if someone would give us something resembling a concrete estimate as to the return on investment we're looking at here. We are very concerned about the description of events in Lane County and the way these funds were used to supplant, and the question about sexier programs versus the kind of of mundane issues like revenue and taxation, which frankly are, we think, some of the most important functions counties do. We are concerned that maybe counties don't realize how important that function is, or certainly not putting it at the top of the priority list. We just want assurances that all those kinds of fears are just, you know, kind of a bad meal late at night.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Tricia Smith, from our perspective, we've listened carefully to, we think we've heard what the counties have said about what the improvements will be. My hearing of that is that there are properties out there that they are unaware of, and if they get people out on the ground driving around, they can find these properties and then assess them appropriately. I would ask you to ask for a more detailed description of how properties are assessed in counties now, because my understanding is there's a great deal of interaction between building permit offices and county assessor's offices. So you don't necessarily have to drive by the property to know that a house has been built there. And so before we just automatically assume that there's just a whole bunch of stuff out there that nobody knows about, I would ask that you ask some more pointed questions about the current process and find out where the holes actually are.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Call.
And I'd just like to, it seems to me also that, you know, in this discussion, there is an incentive for counties to go out there and find property and increase assessment because their tax revenues increase as well. So I understand that there's a need to do this, but I think that there is an adequate incentive already in place for counties to go out and try to increase their tax revenues, their property tax revenues, which is the fact that they get money from it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Phillips. The department asked to be heard in the event that we saw the Dash 3 amendment, so he's here for that. And I'd also ask you if you would respond to the CAFA issue, especially around maintenance of effort on the part of the counties.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Phillips of the Department of Revenue. There have been a lot of questions, and I will try to limit them to that particular area. Otherwise, I wouldn't have any idea where to start, because it's been an interesting discussion, and it is really an understatement to say that this is a challenging decision to make. We did convene a work group last summer to discuss this with all the taxing districts involved that receive property tax revenues. It is true we did not invite employee organizations that make up all of the various taxing districts. I guess we made a decision that was not an important component of the decision process. What we tried to do is we tried to get the taxing districts to express their interest in the property tax maintenance of an adequate system that we feel we have today, and what their level of concern was for that. We issued a report that in which the first bullet was that we agreed, all the representatives of the taxing districts agreed that it was the property tax is the single most stable and significant source of local government revenue, and the importance of the ability of counties to accurately and fully assess property was high on the agenda. And that really goes to, there's been a lot of discussion from schools. I don't hear fire districts or anybody else here, but from schools, that does go to the assumption in the base assumption in the state school funding formula. If you assume local revenues from property tax, if you keep that assumption and then move forward, that's fine. But this goes to the heart of what that assumption is and if it's actually going to be what Steve has projected. I don't recall, other than I do recall comments by Mr. Williams in the meetings last summer, but the final group did not land on a conclusion that these ideas for revenue generation would enhance the property tax system, the assessment and taxation system. There's been a lot of discussion about enhancing the system. How can we quantify that enhancement? And when will we start getting the revenue from that enhancement? Other than a comment that it would be a nice thing to have, realistically speaking, I don't think we're talking about enhancements to the system. I think we're talking about an adequate system, which is what we have today in most counties. Some of them are in jeopardy for their next, every year there are counties in jeopardy of the next annual session being inadequate, and we do, and we have held those counties to their feet to the fire to say, you've got to fund this or you'll lose this extra money, and it's not a fun process, and often in every case they've come up and actually generated the general fund revenue to cover it. So if you're not enhancing the program, I don't expect you will see additional revenue. You might see additional revenue, but I would not bank on that. What I would be more concerned about is that a county would be unable to maintain an adequate system. In that case, as some of the earlier testimony mentioned, then the Department of Revenue would deny the grant, they would not participate, and to the extent they didn't provide an adequate program, the Department of Revenue would have to go to the county and perform those functions. So that's just kind of where we see our role in this whole thing. It's statutory. I'm going to have to ask for help to focus on some of the questions.
Well, I think one of the issues that has been raised, and sort of tangentially, is the process by which you go through in order to determine the distribution of the CAFA funds and what your statutory responsibilities are. You've mentioned that it sort of the edges of that, but I think it might be useful to go through the details. Several different members have asked questions that are essentially related to that. To that function, and how good the safeguards are in terms of requiring the counties to maintain the effort from their own funds to maintain these assessment and taxation offices.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll do my best to cover that at a high level.
And then I think it would be, if you would, it would be also useful if you would talk about what you expect the costs would be in the event the state had to take over some of these county functions as a result of the county's failure to adequately operate the assessment and taxation office, because that, of course, would have to come out of state funds, most likely general funds, I'm assuming, in order to do that. You may be able to bill later for it, but initially it would have to come out of state coffers in some way or another.
Okay.
Could you just sort of hit that over you on those two subjects?
Sure, I'll do my best. With the grant, each county annually supplies a grant that application that includes all the expenditures they have for the assessment and taxation function. So that would be the appraisers, the collectors, the data folks, and all of that. We review those, and we have established since 1989 a number of criteria that we run those numbers through to see whether or not we feel that it's an adequate effort offer, if you will, application. Some of those criteria are staffing criteria. How many staff are appropriate to perform the services that are necessary? That does vary from county to county. It's a matter of sometimes appraisal approach, and so there are variables involved there. We have staffing models that we apply. There are also ratio studies that we do. And the purpose of that is to take sample accounts, do appraisals on those accounts, compare those to the county's values, and then determine the level of variance from the standard so that we can kind of assess whether the county's having an effective effort in getting accurate values on the tax rolls. We also review other aspects of their programs, but primarily it's values and staffing and outputs. So each year we run through 36 different grants. We go to counties and we meet with the commissioners. We talk to them about the cuts they've made, how they plan to, what their plans are for making up for work. Maybe they've changed their approach to the appraisal. Maybe they're doing more. One county flies over with a plane and reviews things to see, you know, they can pick up new buildings sometimes that way in Grant County. Other counties are using appraisal methods that use
spaces.
More higher level math, as some of them are going out and physically reappraising, and there's a lot of requirement that and Tricia Smith, I'm sorry, I'm pointing to where she was sitting, did mention the permits, and that's very critical to an effective appraisal program. The fact is, a lot of people don't get permits. And so it's those efforts that pick up new value, because if it's permitted, it gets on the tax roll. So those are the kinds of discussions we have with counties annually on their programs. And there is a county, you know, at least every year or two that has a problem, and we insist that they include additional staff. And so those are the discussions. I don't know if that's deep enough for your questions.
Well, it may or may not be. And I have one more that I think is on the same vein. This revenue assessment shows an increase to the counties of $29.6 million this year. I understand that the Ways and Means Committee has cut $5 million something. I mean, not for the year, for the biennium, excuse me. I understand that the Ways and Means Committee, we were told this morning, the Ways and Means has cut out $5 million plus out of the general fund allocations. That would leave a net of approximately $24 million. That looks like an increase to me in the CAFA fund. Is it? And if so, would that change the way in which you measure maintenance of effort?
Mr. Chair, that gets to the heart of really what I mentioned earlier regarding the program enhancements. We talked about the percentage. In those meetings, we talked about the percentage that CAFA makes up of the costs of the assessment and taxation effort, and the fact that that percentage was declining over the years from in the 30s to the lower 20s. And yes, this money, along with other ideas, would have brought additional revenue into the CAFA account, meaning county general fund monies would be allowed to decrease in order to maintain an adequate system. So it's never been my understanding that the idea was to add revenue to the assessment and taxation programs county by county. It would be to maintain the what we call at least an adequate. It does not allow. The plan here does not allow counties to. It does not prevent counties from spending the same amount of money. But the way the system is designed, it does not allow them to spend less. So it would not be a surprise to me whatsoever that if a county received additional money from delinquent interest pursuant to this bill, that they would spend less general fund money. I mean, they're just like counties, I imagine, are just like you. They're making tough decisions. Do I cut a jail? What do I do? You know, and so there's the only catch in the whole program is our ability to review the program and say, this is an adequate level of spending. Now, if they decide to spend more than that, that's totally a county-by-county decision. If they decide to spend less than that, they just don't get to participate in the grant. So there is no assumption in my mind or in the discussions that I recall that would commit counties to spend more money on A&T just because of this.
Thank you. There were some hands, and I didn't keep track. Representative Benson, then. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Phyllis, have you run the numbers already for the cost of replacing these services with your department as opposed to...
Oh, that was the other piece of my question.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah,
yes.
Building on that chair's question. Have you run those numbers? I know that a couple of years ago it appeared that several of the counties were going to go bankrupt and the department was going to have to step in. So I'm just curious, do we have those replacement numbers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, committee, I do not have those numbers. I think here are some of the dynamics. It depends on the county. If it's Multnomah County, that would be one set of numbers. If it was Curry, I think the last time we took a very serious look at it was Curry County last year, and possibly Coos County, where we were seriously trying to determine. We were developing a plan to take over the county assessment functions. I believe the statute, and I haven't read it recently, but my recollection is the statute requires us to step in and to perform the assessment functions. It does not necessarily say that we will perform the collection functions. So that would be also a component of what it would cost the department. We would just step in and perform the assessment functions, and as was mentioned earlier, the state would then withhold money from distributions. The timing on that, I'm sure, would be important. I would say we would not have the numbers that you're asking about until we determined which county it was and what our effort would have to be.
Yes, please.
The question, of course, is I'm just curious about the standard, the measure scale that you use as you go in and try to determine whether or not a particular county, let's say Coos County, is doing an adequate assessment job. Are you measuring that which they spend against the salary and schedule, wages, everything in Coos County, or are you measuring it against what the department would pay for that similar service?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bence, I am not personally involved with the review of the county's expenditures, so I would have to probably dig deeper and get some help from staff on that. I think our analysis goes more to a staffing level than it does to the expenditures themselves. I mean, an appraiser might cost more in one county than the other, but if there's one less appraiser than is necessary in one county, that expenditure is naturally going to go with that employee. And so I think I'm going to have to, I would have to look
into
that.
Is it possible for you to get a rough answer for that tomorrow?
Yeah. And if I,
because we're not going to work the bill today, but I am hoping that we can work it tomorrow, or at least determine what further action we need to take.
Okay.
Other questions? Now's the chance to ask him questions to look at to come back for the work session. Representative Gelser.
Thank you. When I look at the revenue statement, and this goes back to. It appears that the way to fix this issue of creating adequacy there is coming entirely from contributions of everyone that's not counties. What in this proposal are counties sacrificing or giving, or is this totally floated by schools and cities, this increased investment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gelser, this particular bill...
this takes it all, doesn't it?
Takes all of the delinquent interest. Currently, and I think I'm going to get to your question, currently 25% comes off the top from all taxing districts, and then an additional 25% from non-county and non-school, so they don't participate in the second 25%. The remaining delinquent interest comes from distributions to all taxing districts, including the county. So of the, whatever the number is being used, of the additional 15, roughly million, whatever percent counties have of that, if it's 19%, then 19% would be from counties.
Mr. Chair, I just want to put on the record my... I'm sensitive and appreciate the needs of the counties and agree that counties are really struggling, but our schools and our cities are really struggling as well. This just makes me very nervous. I've heard from the Department of Revenue that there doesn't seem to be hope of additional revenue, so we're asking the cities and the counties to make an investment in what are core county services for a benefit that they may never receive. And I'd like, and maybe I'm misunderstanding that. If I am, I'd like to better understand that before tomorrow. But I would need to understand what it is that the school districts and the cities that are giving up revenues are getting in the immediate term to make it worth the sacrifice, because this is a core function of county government. I'm uncomfortable.
Thank you. I hope that we will have some additional amendments to consider tomorrow, and that may deal with some of that. Other questions? Let me just add, colleagues, before we break for this morning, that this is a core function of county government. It is one of the primary places where ordinary citizens interface with government, allowing, sort of taking off of Mr. Wyatt's comment, failing to maintain adequacy in this system could have very serious consequences in the long run for voluntary tax compliance and the basic respect for government. Because this is one of those places where virtually everyone who owns property comes into contact with government. Doing it right, doing it properly, doing it well and accurately is critically important for the basic respect of government in our society, just as it is the case in other places where government services or agencies come in direct contact with citizens. I don't want to give away where I am on this bill today, because at this point I want to look at the possibilities that we're going to consider hopefully tomorrow. But I think we haven't really talked about the fact that this is not a short-term issue. This is a long-term issue. Representative Mr. Wyatt from Linn County made that clear in his testimony. We have to figure out a way to make certain that these kinds of basic functions of government are maintained. It may not raise any money next year for school districts or for anyone else to maintain these services, but it for sure will cost money for all of the agencies for which the assessor's office essentially works if we don't maintain at least minimal levels of adequacy in assessment and taxation. Long term, where we're headed is a recipe for disaster in terms of maintaining these functions. And I will remind you that we still have approximately 25% of our school funds come from local property taxes. Absolutely critical money to maintain schools. Almost all of their general operation funds for almost all other districts, cities, fire districts, libraries, on and on, come from property taxes. And so those this is an absolutely critical function. Colleagues, I believe we have to be thinking about this on a long-term basis, not a short-term basis. If you allow these services to degrade, if you allow these programs to degrade, the cost of reestablishing them and of restoring the confidence of ordinary citizens that other citizens are paying their fair share of the costs of government because their properties are adequately and properly assessed and they pay their taxes is going to be very difficult. It's going to cost a lot more money to restore that confidence than if you do a decent job of maintaining them in the first place. My opinion is that we're already way behind on these functions in some counties that we heard from when we looked at the other bill, at the Jackson County bill, when we heard from counties that hadn't done a physical assessment for many years. That is a serious, serious problem. I'm not suggesting that I know the answer to that problem, but that isn't one that I think we've adequately addressed in the hearing today, and we need to do that. Any response to that comment? All right. Anyone else? Thank you. With that, colleagues, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 563. Colleagues, I expect that we will be meeting tomorrow morning at 8:30. 8:30 tomorrow, not 8 o'clock, and we will take up this bill and a couple of others that we really need to determine what we're going to do. Thank you. And with that, the Revenue Committee is adjourned.